Welcome to Room Escape Divas. Today we are visited once again by the Spiras, and they are here today to talk about their recent tours.
Woo! Here are the bare necessities to win this room successfully. First check potential answers more than twice. And treat the props respectfully, and don't use force excessively, and bring your found accessories to light. And if you wonder about the unknown, we'll solve things faster when we're not alone. Communication is the key if we are looking to succeed. When you are searching with your lamp and by perchance help us advance, then maybe tell us too. Let's hope complexities won't ruin this room for you. This room for you.
Thank you so much for getting our last name correct.
I'm really ashamed. I like have been calling you Spira for like half a year, and then somebody said it's Spira, and I'm like, oh no,
that happened during it was David that said it was Spira. It was during the conference. Remember, man, Pans? I was the one that mispronounced it.
Yeah, it's okay. Most people get it wrong. It's kind of deceptive.
I think Man Pans just blanked on us.
Nope, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Don't you remember during the conference? It's recorded. And I was the one that was being corrected on stage in front of a thousand
people.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. That's right. Maybe I just blocked out the humiliation.
What are you talking about? It was me that got it wrong. Anyway, it's great to have you both here. We have David and Lisa on. They are Room Escape artists, and they have had a whirlwind of fun times in the escape room world. And so they are here to talk about all sorts of things. And so it's pretty cool. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I am really happy that we got your names correct. We won't ever forget it now. So I won't anyway.
He did that to you on purpose.
So how are you guys doing? It has been crazy for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun and a lot less sleep.
Yeah, it looks like it. It seemed like every time you kind of logged onto the chat, it was like, I'm here briefly while I'm in Poland, or I'm here briefly while I'm like in some far-flung other country or something.
Yeah, I guess we both have kind of been living the puzzle nerd dream right now.
Yeah.
That's true. The first thing that you guys... You probably want to talk about is your trip to Poland, which is crazy. You were a guest speaker, or were you like the honored guest? Were you like the main speaker?
He was
the honored guest.
Yeah.
Honored guest.
I had to take this trip without Lisa because vacation days, but it was an amazing trip. We got this email kind of out of nowhere.
We were in Germany at the time when we got this email, just, you know, because.
Wow.
It got this email asking if we wanted to come and speak in Poland, and I was like, "Is this real?" It turned out it was very real. Row Escape was what was the conference. It's the first Polish escape room conference, and it was put on by a mix of the guys from LockMe, which is the kind of the Polish aggregator. And they've had a lot of success, as you know, relative to the aggregator market in Poland, and also the guys from Exit 19 in Poland, which is one of the escape room companies. And they kind of wanted to see, you know, put together a top tier conference, and they really did. They had great speakers. It was live translated. Like, everyone got an earpiece, and if the talk was in Polish, it was live translated into English. If it was in English, it was live translated into Polish. Which is it was the first time that I had ever given a talk and everything was being translated live. So it was weird to figure out whether or not the jokes landed, you know, 5 or 6 seconds later.
And who was all there then if it was in Poland and there were a lot of different languages? Were there a lot of speakers from just worldwide?
So most of the speakers were Polish. There were a few from Russia. They had Sergei, who is the owner of Claustrophobia. He gave the opening talk. Most of the speakers were Polish, and then I was there. The audience was a mixture. There were a few people from there's some people from Western Europe. There were some people from Israel. a lot of people from Poland. And it was it was beautiful conference at a World Heritage site. And it ended with this crazy 10-minute fountain show.
Oh, right. I remember you saying there was a crazy fountain show.
Wait, so what is a... Okay, so is that exactly what I think it sounds like? A fountain show? Just...
At this, the facility that they had it at was this like 100-year-old building. It was kind of like the exhibition hall next to this this dome that is a really famous building, and outside, kind of in between the two places, they have this giant fountain. Like, it's huge. And they've also since retrofitted it with like lights and projections, and there was a custom fountain show put on with massive amounts of water, kind of like the Bellagio, but they also had this lighting thing going on.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It was clearly the best part of the experience.
It left an impression. I just wasn't expecting it. And it was cold outside, but I had to stare. I was just mesmerized by it.
And how long did the conference go for?
It was a full day. It was also coupled with, they ran Poland's first escape room championship. This was like a multi-month thing where they had regional competitions, and 10 teams made it to the Polish championship, which was the day before the conference. They asked me to come and give some opening remarks, and I kind of fumbled through some words. I just didn't know what to say, and it was kind of weird for me because I was like, I don't actually know how many people here are going to be able to understand or even care what I'm saying. But everyone was real gracious, and I really had my shit together during my actual talk.
I was going to ask, so what was your talk about?
An updated version of a talk we've given a few times called The Player Perspective. Normally, it's Lisa and I, we both give kind of these...
We tell a whole bunch of anecdotes of things that have happened to us while playing escape rooms. Some really good, some really bad, most really funny. And then we kind of give some takeaways for players and for owners, designers, companies from these experiences. And it's a really fun talk to give. And also it's different every time because we keep updating it with new experiences that we're having. So before going to Poland, we, you know, pulled out some that probably wouldn't be relevant to an international or a non-native English speaking audience, and threw in a few that were particularly interesting about games in the U.S. and added newer anecdotes.
Yeah, and made sure that we addressed the public ticketing system that is prevalent in North America, because literally everybody in Poland who I spoke to, I mean, like, I had the same two conversations over and over again because everybody eagerly asked the same two questions. One was, what the hell is up with the public ticketing system? And then I had to explain to everyone that, like, it's not all bad. There are some virtues to it, but it can also be done very poorly. And then the second question that everybody was dying to ask me was, how do the escape rooms in Poland compare to either the rest of Europe or the United States? Everybody kind of framed up their question differently.
And what was your answer to that?
Well, my answer to that was, through much of the trip, I have to say, was uninformed. One of the things that I found out in the final hours of the trip, because I didn't pay for anything there. I was a guest. They covered everything for me. And I had no concept of what the escape rooms there cost. Turned out, escape rooms cost between 100 and 200 zloty. And 150 is like the average. And that's per group. And that is about 150 zloty is about $40 US.
Ooh. Per group.
Yeah. And so basically plus or minus $10 from 40 is what we're talking about per group. Now, once I knew that, I mean, the games I play, I didn't play any games that were terrible or anything like that. I played a few that like blew me away without even knowing what the pricing was. I played a few that I liked and a few that I was like, it's all right. Which is kind of like any escape room trip. But once I knew what the pricing was, I was like, holy shit, this is the best of value for escape rooms that I've ever encountered and possibly in the world.
Even better than Budapest?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, what do you think the factors were in a much cheaper price? Do you think it was like lower rent prices, just lower costs in general, or was there other reasons for it?
I mean, I think that, you know, whenever you're outside, you know, when you're outside of the U.S. or in a country that where the exchange rate is different, the economics are fundamentally different, and people don't spend as lavishly, and prices are generally lower for everything. Those are kind of the factors. You know, I'm quite certain that, you know, rent and labor costs were lower. Buildouts were being done, you know, really, you know, everyone was doing their own buildouts is what it seemed, you know, and it was just a lot of people with, you know, with passion making these different games. And some of them, and it's kind of like what you see everywhere, some of them are focusing more on trying to, you know, get, you know, a fast return on investment. I played one or two games. One game in particular where the owner, you know, flat out said, like, you know, we spent more money on this than we will be able to, you know, make back, or at the very least make a you know, make a really good profit margin on. And it showed. I mean, the game blew me away. It would be good in literally any city that I've ever visited.
Now, the interesting thing you said, that it was put on by an escape room company, but also an escape room aggregator, which I learned about, but we don't really have here in North America.
No, there's been a bunch of people who have kind of tried to get get into the North American market and haven't succeeded.
But this aggregator is pretty cool because you'll not only find reviews, but you can book rooms through that. Is it correct? Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and they've got a really elegant system. It's lockme.pl, and the people who made it, they're awesome. Really nice guys. When I sat down and kind of met them, they were, you know, their story was kind of almost identical to Lisa and mine, where it was like they went and played some escape rooms and they fell in love with the concept and started to try to figure out where the other escape rooms in Poland were, and they made a map. And in our case, we ended up going a different route and writing, you know, reviews and editorial content, and they went and created an aggregator and aggregated review site. But you know, their whole kind of approach and where they're coming from was so remarkably similar to ours. It was really cool getting to know them.
That's awesome. I don't even know how they have the booking aspect. Are they all through one booking software, or how does that work?
I am not really sure what the booking systems that are popular in Poland are. If, you know, to put my technologist cap on, because this kind of stuff is what I design in my regular life. Most of these booking softwares have an open API that can be integrated into, and my guess is that they just went and did that.
So overall, it was a great experience. Would you do it again?
If they gave an invitation for us to come back, we would be there in a heartbeat.
Do they plan on making it yearly, or maybe longer, or who knows?
They're planning on making it an annual conference. Like they really went all out with this. They had a film crew there. They had the translators. Like the impression that I had was that they went all out. It was a free conference for people to attend.
Whoa,
I think that they were
free.
It was free. I think that what they basically were trying to do is like just establish themselves and say like, look, we can put on something great, and they really did it.
Do you see a more North American presence there, or do you see it attracting North Americans or other Europeans to it, or was it mostly people from Poland, or do you see that like changing in the future?
I think that they could attract an international audience. I mean, if only because they have interesting escape rooms, and you know, the expense is getting there. And once you're there, you know, there's fantastic food. You know, the city that I was in, which is Wrocław, which is also
happens to be where my family is from.
Yeah.
But when it was Germany, now it's Poland.
It was a beautiful city. I mean, just such a beautiful European city with this gorgeous square. Awesome cathedrals and just like everything you kind of want out of a trip to Europe. So yeah, I would go back without any hesitation. If you have the budget and you're interested in escape rooms, it's a good place to go.
It's worth it.
In regards to escape rooms, was the language a problem?
So that was one of the coolest parts about this, was that I got teamed up with various people from, you know, who were attending the conference. Some of them were like kind of like, you know, enthusiasts. I was playing with like this couple, Agata and Wojciech, and they were kind of like the Amanda Harris and Drew Nelson of Poland. Not owners, you know, not reviewers, just like they've played all over. And what was so amazing about playing with them was that Wojciech only spoke Polish, and Agata was bilingual and spoke reasonably good English. And so we got locked in the room together, and the three of us just like started realizing we were all communicating on this.
And
like,
David speaks no Polish. Yeah, none.
Yeah, none. I am terrible with any language that isn't English. And we were just kind of like communicating through what we came to refer to as the language of escape rooms. And I by the end of it, you know, me and Wojciech, I felt like we were absolutely friends, and mostly like we exchanged the most basic of words, and you know, Agata would translate for us, but even, and that was rarely happening in the room. It was mostly over a meal. And then I also played with a few different owners from all over Poland, and they were, you know, we had this, you know, we were cultures apart, but we all shared this knowledge and language of escape rooms, and it worked so well.
You know, that would be really cool if Red Bull decide, if they were to do the World Championships again, if they were to split up the teams and have individuals go into a room with someone that doesn't speak their language, and then they would have to try to escape.
I think the next time around, they have to keep, you know, make sure that they don't keep the group segregated like they did the first time, because I think they actually missed out on this incredible opportunity. It was such a moving experience for all of us, and we all really felt it, and it was almost like haunting, where I was in this space that we were solving puzzles. The Polish escape rooms, they love wordplay, so it was kind of like,
that's hard,
yeah. So I would be kind of like in this weird situation where they would be like, I can't translate this for you. I can tell you what it means, but I can't tell you what it means. But we were still in there working together, and I was like, well, you know, the last digit on this lock, you know, needs to be on the tail end of the alphabet. And, you know, so I was still able to contribute, even though I had no idea what the word that we were generating was.
Do their word locks have like crazy accents? I mean, I actually don't know anything.
Most of the word locks that I saw were your typical master locks that you see, you know, pretty much everywhere. And, you know, and they're variations on locks kind of throughout the world, but for the most part it seemed like the letter locks were kind of what I was used to.
And this, when did you do that conference? Sorry, I you probably said and I forgot.
That would have been the last weekend in October.
Oh wow. And then you rushed home because it was time for you to do your own tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were hosting our Escape Immerse Explore in New York City that next weekend, the first weekend in November.
Because you're not busy at all.
We'll sleep when we're dead.
So tell us about the jet lag and how that affected the planning of everything.
So I have a couple of superpowers, and one of them is that I can stay awake for days.
It's terrible.
And I can just pretty much get over jet lag within a day. I'll just stay up until it's time for me to go to bed, have the best night's sleep ever, and wake up and go about my life.
So I was really sad that I couldn't go on this tour. I really wanted to, but scheduling wise, it just didn't end up working out for me. So tell us how you came about with the idea to begin with.
Before we do that, just we're sad you couldn't make it, but there will be more.
Yeah, stay tuned.
We could probably even explain what the tour is.
Basically, the idea is something that we'd been talking about for forever. This is a thing we've kind of wanted to do since the New York market grew to a point where we were like, there's enough here that we could invite people.
And it came out of a few places. The first was that there's a lot of great games to see in New York. It's our home city, and we wanted to show off our home market. The second thing was that we really love playing with other enthusiasts, and we've ended up building a network where we can go all over the country and meet up with people who read our site or are on the Facebook group or whatever, and just play escape rooms in the language of escape rooms and English. And also, it came from a place of knowing that people write in to us for recommendations in New York City and are a little bit wary about traveling to New York City, especially if they're not city people, they're not used to public transit. They're just a little bit nervous about navigating New York. So we wanted to make an event that was going to make New York easy for people, show off New York and its escape rooms, and bring people together and let them, you know, meet each other and play together.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was really early on. When people email us and ask us for recommendations, we kept getting these emails from people asking, what's the best escape room in Times Square? And, you know, we were like, well, there's a whole bunch of escape rooms in Chinatown and in Brooklyn and, you know, in Tribeca and in Queens that you should really go see. And they're like, no, Times Square. And we're like, you're New Yorking wrong. And this place really isn't dangerous. It's not the 70s anymore. You should leave Times Square. And so we were like, there's definitely a market for us to like help people get out of Times Square. That was kind of where I think the first thought came from. So we had 24 people come in from all over the country.
Yeah, and one person from Brooklyn. But yeah, from upstate New York and then from California, Arizona, Chicago.
Oregon,
Las Vegas,
Michigan,
yeah,
Virginia.
We're forgetting people.
Yeah.
Did any of the regulars go? I mean, our regulars that we all know together.
Wow, that just made us a clique.
Yes.
There were Dan Egnor, who from the kind of the former escape room directory. He was out here with his wife. But for the most part, it wasn't people from Slack. It wasn't even people that we necessarily knew. We had no idea who we were going to sell these tickets to. We didn't know if we were going to sell any tickets. We were kind of hoping to sell a minimum of 6. That was where we were like, if we sell 6, we'll do this. And we sold 24, which blew away our expectations. And everybody, the people, were amazing. One of the things that was so special about it for us was that a lot of people came out with, you know, with a group of people that they wanted to play with or one person, and they were like a little bit nervous about teaming up with others.
That would be me.
Yeah, by the end, they were all like, you know, Sunday morning came around and, you know, some of the people who showed up early were like, hey, did such and such show up yet? And, you know, it was like people were eager to see each other, and there were people who didn't get to play with others, and they were just like, you know, next time, you know, I don't know if I want to just play with my friends. I want to mix it up with some strangers, because this group of people was so phenomenal.
How many days did it go for?
It was a Friday night, all day Saturday, and then Sunday morning.
Oh, that's awesome. And you squeezed how many games in?
We had 5 escape rooms and 1 immersive experience that was not an escape room. Mm-hmm. We also had a meal and a talk and some hanging out time.
A networking gathering thing. It went so smoothly. We also lucked out with weather.
Yeah. We really lucked out with weather. But it was great. Nobody had trouble getting in.
And organizing a 3-day event is a big deal. And it's like, oh my goodness, that's a lot to take on.
All Lisa. I come up with these like terrible ideas and then Lisa makes them happen.
Oh, are you the event planner, Lisa?
I guess so. I'm definitely the scheduler.
She's the everything planner. I'm like, hey, we're going to go and try this crazy thing. And then Lisa figures out how to actually do it.
I will say that the puzzle for how to fit all of these people into all of these different games on the schedules of the games with transportation across the city is the hardest puzzle I solved all year. And there is a beautiful, colorful spreadsheet with like 4 different tries before I got one that I thought would work.
Yeah, her spreadsheet is magnificent.
Oh, I don't doubt it, because we have problems with just the 4 of us just trying to find one, right? So,
oh my gosh,
could you imagine with 24 and then they have to eat and transport and oh my goodness, that's insane.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like isolated teams. A lot of these teams shifted based on people's preferences. There were one or two people who had played a whole bunch of the games in New York that were being featured on the tour, so we had to bounce them around. So then we also ended up having to introduce some locals, people who we knew from around the area who had played enough games that they didn't want to participate in the tour, but like we knew were just great players and fun people. And so we were, plugging them in with the group. It was
so you brought in temps.
Yep.
They were temp puzzlers.
So were all of these rooms ones that you had played before?
Yes, which made for a really weird day to go to all these escape rooms that we'd already played and not play, but talk about the games a lot. It was totally fun. It was just different. But yeah, we had played all the games and we had chosen games that we thought really highlighted the different aspects of the escape rooms in New York and that were all phenomenal games.
And also how New York has this unusual collection of games where the owners are from, in a lot of cases, from all sorts of, all different parts of the world. We have a company where the guys are from Budapest, and their games play very, very similarly to games that we've seen in Budapest. We have, Komnata Quest, and Brooklyn Escape Rooms, which it used to be Claustrophobia, and they have, very quintessential Russian style games.
Oh wait, they changed their name?
Yeah, they
separated
they,
from
they the... separated from Claustrophobia. A lot of the original ones did, and that was actually Sergei, the owner of Claustrophobia, gave the opener in Poland. He actually talked, he spoke very bluntly about their own failures in their attempts to franchise and kind of their plans to try to do that again. It was a really interesting talk, probably the most honest and interesting talk I've ever heard from an escape room owner.
I mean, a lot of escape rooms, the ones that we enjoy, are where the owners themselves are passionate, and it can be hard if it's not your own, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it wasn't even a lack of passion. I think it's just that franchising is really hard. Franchising across countries is even harder, and languages and
just
cultural expectations.
The markets are so different and the cultures are different, and translating all of this stuff to these other markets presents a lot of challenges.
And you plan on doing this tour again. Is this true?
It is.
It is true. We sent out a survey after the tour to everyone who attended, and we got really great feedback.
80-question survey, and basically everybody answered it entirely.
And they said it wasn't a burden. We asked.
Yeah, we were like, this is a small sample set, but it's the only sample we have, and we need to figure out everything we did right and wrong. And like, we're hard on the companies we review. We're like, we want you to be honest and help us make this better.
They gave us a lot of really good feedback, and it was a resounding yes to doing this again. But we also learned a lot of things that we can do better.
Mm-hmm. So we'll. We will likely run it again in New York, and then we're going to explore some other cities too.
Oh wow!
Or at least another city to take it to.
Yeah, we'll take it somewhere else, but we're not sure where yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like the Room Escape Artist Touring Company now. That'd be kind of fun.
That's kind of what we're going for with it. It's not the tickets are expensive. This is not a massive moneymaker, and in spite of the napkin math. It's expensive to do this right, and we were really trying to make sure that we treat our guests to an amazing time. We really believe in this community, and we want to grow it. And just meeting these people and spending the weekend with them was one of the best things we've done since we started this website.
So I think we learned as much from them, if not more, as they learned from us.
Yeah, it was just fantastic.
And then you're going to open up a cruise ship.
Oh, Legionnaire's disease, no.
Lisa will figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't really like water.
Yeah, I know. She doesn't do water.
So what are some of the lessons that you did learn from this, if you're willing to share? If not, no worries.
Some of them are going to be trade secrets, but I think the biggest things were, we need to make sure that next time we build in a little bit more time early on to get to know people. We did build in, and we communicated that everybody could come and hang out. But everyone, we made it sound really optional, which it was. And it turned out the people who didn't come were like, yeah, I kind of wish I didn't go and play that extra room and would have just come and, you know, hung out with just the group. That was...
I think there's some information that we could have communicated earlier or communicated better. We were figuring out, you know, what we needed to communicate as we went.
Yeah. But by and large, I mean, everybody got to the games on time. Everything ran smoothly. Nobody seemed to feel a tremendous amount of pressure.
People liked the games.
That's good.
And that was another really interesting thing is that, you know, everybody really enjoyed the games and was happy to have played all of them. But one person's favorite was another person's not so favorite, which was amazing. At the end of the Saturday where we had played four games, I asked the group that I had been with all day, which was their favorite, and everybody gave a different answer.
And in the survey, we asked them to put the games that they played in order, you know, from favorite to least favorite. And the stratification of that was really broad, which also kind of proved out to us, you know, the belief that we had that was underpinning the way we approached reviewing on Room Escape Artist from the get-go, which is that we didn't necessarily want to make broad stroke judgments of, you know, this was great and this was terrible. We wanted to live more in that gray area of this is kind of who this game is for and this is the type of player who would enjoy it. And that was, you know, that's really what's been the driving force behind our content from day one, and seeing that kind of prove out this over that weekend was really nifty.
Yeah, that was amazing. Just, you know, one game in particular, people either loved or hated. Yeah. But everyone was glad they played.
That was Paradiso, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was kind of the feedback we've gotten from players throughout its history, is that it's like, wow, I'm glad I played that, not sure I loved it, or glad I played that, and that was the best thing I've ever seen.
So we're coming to the end of the year. Now, Room Escape Divas probably should have a tradition with this, but we don't, because we barely can get an episode out in time. However, you guys have your tradition, so what's coming up?
Well, I guess our end-of-year traditions, we've got three of them. One seems to be showing up on your podcast.
That's true. That is true.
That's our tradition, then.
Yeah,
we have a tradition.
Next time, we'll have to come on with sleigh bells.
And you guys can sing.
Oh, no. And then...
Well, we have the Holiday Buyer's Guide, which we've just published.
Yep, and that was something we kind of did on a whim last year, and it was a resounding success.
This is one of those David has an idea, so then we have to do it.
Yeah. And... And people were kind of complaining last year, like, well, it's, you know, what about Amazon Canada? What about Amazon UK? And so this year, the Holiday Buyer's Guide is considerably larger, and everything that we can, that we could link to from Amazon CA and Amazon UK, we did so. So we're trying to be a little bit more inclusive, and we have some really interesting and fun items on there. This year, I think, what was it, the unreasonably complex clocks were our favorites and seem to be everybody's
people
favorite.
Seem to like those a lot because they're awesome.
I looked through it. So they have everything in this buyer's guide. It's not just escape room board games, but a number of just fun and unique games and knickknacks and objects and clothing.
Sorry, can I just say how that sounded just now? Like... You don't just have escape games, they have games, too.
I mean, we snuck in some commentary on escape rooms. I found this incredible sandpaper, this ultra-flexible sandpaper, which has made me so happy because I use sandpaper on all to modify all sorts of things. But this ultra-flex stuff is ridiculous, and... I also am on a mission to get escape room owners to sand everything because I'm tired of getting splinters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. So actually, this might be a dumb question. Just for those of us, myself included, who are not as familiar with the Holiday Escape Room Guide, can you explain a little bit about it first?
Yeah, I probably should do that.
We put together a list of products that you can buy as gifts for your loved ones who love escape rooms too.
Or yourself.
Or yourself, yeah. And it's a whole range of things that you might want to give yourself or others for the holidays.
It's tabletop escapes, it's board games that we think if you like escape rooms, you probably would enjoy these games. It's video games. It's
puzzles.
Puzzles, you know, just actual tangible puzzles. We've got a book list, some travel gear that we've kind of, you know, we've been on the road pretty endlessly, and every once in a while we encounter something that, you know, makes our lives easier.
Some tools.
Good organization to donate to that we're a big fan of, called Child's Play, that allows people to buy and ship toys directly to children's hospitals, which is kind of a cause that's near and dear to my heart.
It's a whole range of stuff, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of variety.
Yeah. And we spent basically all of last year, we were going to all sorts of places, kind of hunting down things that we could put into it this year. And we've already started gathering ideas for next year.
Excellent. And so what is the third tradition that you have?
Well, the third tradition is the Golden Lock-In Award.
January 2nd, when we announce what we felt were the games we had the most fun in over the course of the year. And each year, it's gotten progressively more competitive.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think the first year that we did this award, we had played just over 50 games in the calendar year.
And we gave it to like 10 companies.
10 games.
10 games. That was, yeah.
10 games. And then last year, we had played about 150 games. And we still only gave...
I think it was 12.
12, yeah. And we're not planning to give any more or many more.
Yeah.
It's going to be right around that range again this year, but we've played far more games.
It's like 250 games this year.
Wow. Holy crap.
It just happened.
It just happened. I don't know how.
So you've played almost, except for like, apart from 100 days, you've played almost an escape room a day.
Yeah, no, we're not quite on the level of Sarah over in the UK.
Okay.
But
it does make it really challenging to choose which games are going to win our award, and we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, so this.
So stay tuned.
Yeah, we've been debating and making our list and checking it far more than twice.
So what are some of the criteria that you guys look for when you're going into a room then to consider it for a Golden Lock Award?
So there are a few basics. First is that we had to have played it in that calendar year. The second was that Lisa and I both had to have played it. So there are a few companies that aren't in the running, like anything I played in Poland. And I also played Time Run in London on my way out to Poland. And those games are freaking brilliant, and they cannot be considered. But if you are anywhere near Time Run, you should go play before they have to close due to their building being torn down.
And we also established a few other rules. A company can only win once per year. So mm-hmm. if a company had multiple really awesome games, we're going to choose one.
And that there was no arbitrary minimum or maximum. We could give as few or as many as we felt, but we've been trying to make it a little bit more of a rare thing.
And that's pretty much it. Those are the only rules. It's really, we're just choosing games that we enjoyed the most, that we had the best time in, that we thought were really fun. And we try to write these reviews all year rather objectively, picking out who will like this and, you know, who this game is really for and what was really great about it. And this is our award is a celebration of...
It's our chance to gush.
Yeah, we loved it. Just us. And you might not have, but we did.
Yeah. And some of the games that we played this year, I can't wait to reveal this list. I mean, it's not going to be... A lot of them aren't going to be a shock to anybody because, you know, if you've read some of these reviews, I'm sure there were people who were like, yeah, that's going to win a Golden Lock-In. Like, there's some that are pretty clear. But this is, you know... This year's list is so obnoxiously.
I bet some of them will be a shock.
Some of them will be a shock, but some of them won't.
Yeah.
A lot of them, a number of them won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. There will definitely be some big surprises in there, I think.
Which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, comparatively year to year and stuff, what do you see changing in the lists? Like, I know that we talk about the fact that, you know, we'll play an escape room, we'll think it's amazing, and then we'll play 50 other escape rooms and then realize that that one escape room we played wasn't as amazing as we thought it was. So how do you, like, what trends do you see changing from year to year with your Golden Lock-ins?
So the first year we did it, from the first year to the second year, after we published the list, Lisa and I looked back at the first year. And we realized that only three of the games that were in the first year would have even been a contender for the second year. This time around, it's probably about the same thing.
Yeah, it's most of the games that won last year would not even be contenders this year.
And that's not a knock against those games.
Those games were all fabulous, and they absolutely deserve to win that award. Yeah,
it just the level of innovation in this industry, the level of attention to detail, and the creativity that people are pouring into their games, it's just kind of like a, you know, it's
the games keep getting better. Yeah. And of course, that's what we wanted from the start. That's what we were hoping for when we started writing, that the games would keep getting better so that we could keep playing better games.
And also feeding back to our original philosophy of no star ratings, because this was going to, you know, what was one star, you know, what was a five star 3 years ago is probably like a 3 year, maybe even a two star now. The rate of change in this industry is astounding.
So the Golden Lock Awards, as you said, is pretty cool because this is your chance to gush. But I could also understand, especially when I would give my opinions on which rooms to do in Toronto or when I used to review, I would always keep in the back of my mind, this is something that I'm pretty sure a new person would enjoy. It might not be something I would enjoy, but it'd be something like I think the majority of people here would enjoy, because I've never seen an escape room before. And so it almost doesn't even really matter, because it'll just be amazing as long as it doesn't suck. And so I always would hold back almost on the things that I really enjoyed myself. So I don't know if you guys do that, or if Lisa and David, if you have things that you really love in an escape room, but you kind of hold back on that when you give a review, because you know that's more of a personal preference. And if you do that, like, what are your personal joys in an escape room?
So I don't actually think we hold back on our joys. What we do hold back on are the things that we get get persnickety about.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like when our joys and the way that, you know, we've actively tried to not become cynical about escape rooms and about game design. And the way that I think we've done that has been by embracing the fact that every game we walk into, with incredibly rare exception, every game does something special, something that we hadn't seen before. Even if it's just like, it could be the most minor of things, but we're always on the lookout for what innovation did they come up with, big or small, you know, impressive, or like maybe we're the only two people who ever even noticed it. And that's what we keep embracing, and that's what we derive our joy from. And the games that we, I think, love the most are the ones where they have combed over every single detail and really thought through, you know, the Scott Nicholson, you know, why scenario, but also just from a clean execution and vision. That's what really makes us happy. The stuff that we hold back is that, like, Lisa, you hate labs.
Oh, I
so
hate
much.
Labs. And if I had to play another lab, no. We'll play plenty of labs and we'll write amazing reviews of labs, but I'm so sick of labs.
And we just played a game the other day that was phenomenal, and a lab was a massive component of it. And we walked out and said, that was great, in spite of that. I don't love Prison Break games. I perpetually make jokes. Last year over on April Fool's Day, I put out like a series of escape room haikus, one of them specifically making fun of the steel toilets in like every prison escape room. I am so tired of sticking my hand down a steel toilet and fishing out a key. Like, if I never ever do that again, I think that would be fantastic.
But he will keep doing it because I don't like sticking my hand into things that I don't know.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for a kid.
And we're not going to hold that against them in the review because it's, you know, we know that Prison Break and Lab Games are two of the most popular genres. They're
popular for a reason. People love them.
Right. And the...
People love steel toilets.
The steel toilet, which should be the name of a parody metal band. That's a popular trope. It does add to the immersion. It's a real thing, but I'm so tired of it. But that doesn't mean that it should be, you know, beat out of existence.
Yeah, we also try not to knock games for having puzzle types that neither one of us like, or if one of us got stuck solving a puzzle type that we don't like because there was no one in the room who wanted to do it. Like, those are our personal preferences. That's not a knock on them necessarily. It might have been a good puzzle and I just didn't want to.
Yeah,
that's mostly all process puzzles for me. I'm a useless person in an escape room now, I think.
You're not useless. You come in and like solve the puzzle at the last minute.
We'll be struggling there
for 15 minutes, Errol will be like, "Oh yeah, I solved it at the beginning, but I didn't want to rob you of your chance to solve."
I don't think I say that. It's more along like, "Manda, it's a logic puzzle. Work on the logic puzzle."
Other side of the room.
Yeah. It's a good thing Mike's not here. He'd start ranting about the toilet we made him search through in
this is a spoiler. You probably don't want to say which one it's in.
I won't say which room it's in, but it had water. It had like black water in it and stuff, and poor Mike was not impressed with us. And you're like, "You can do it, Mike." And then we walked off and yeah.
Always my job to stick my hand into the mysterious fluid or the mysterious armhole. Like, it's always my job. Every once in a while, we play with someone who's really eager for it, and I'm like, "Knock yourself out, buddy."
I remember I was in a room, and I was with Edwin from the locked room, and he walked up to this puzzle because we went into the room, and he was, I think, second. I can't remember. There's only like four of us. And then he looked at one of the things. It's like, "Oh, it's a maze." And then he left. And it's like, "Oh, what? What's over here? Oh, it's a maze." And then my sister's going, "What? Isn't anybody going to do this puzzle?" "Oh, you can." Yeah. No, we hear you. As you said, there are a lot of, even searching. I won't tell a room not to do searching. I just don't like doing it. But it's something everybody can do at the beginning. And people love, a lot of people love searching. So
totally.
And it makes people feel special because they found the really important thing. And they did a thing. And they participated. And they were important.
And searching ends up being the thing that I spend most of my time doing when we're playing with enthusiasts, because I know no one wants to do it. And I'm like, "All right, I will."
This was the year of David's search renaissance.
Yes. I've really worked hard to get better at searching because I just found it really embarrassing that I realized like every hint we were taking was a search fail. And I was like, this is just kind of humiliating. So I doubled down on it. And what I found is also is kind of cool as a reviewer to be able to just stand back, take in the room. You know, you can always stop searching for a moment and watch someone solve a puzzle or whatever. And if I see a puzzle that I'm really excited about, I'll jump in. You know, and otherwise, I'm totally content to find everything and make sure that everyone has all the components that they need.
And you can find things even if you don't speak Polish.
That's true.
That is true.
That is very true.
Can also do dexterity puzzles without speaking Polish.
Yes.
we can't knock it just because it's not our preference after playing a whole couple hundred rooms, or in our case, more than that. It's really, for us, it ultimately comes down to is, you know, okay, you have a trope, but did you use it smart? Did you use it well? Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like seeing another Marvel movie. I'm tired of Marvel movies. Doesn't mean they're bad.
So you have seen a lot of different branches of escape rooms, I guess, because maybe we're at the cusp of them now kind of branching off, trying different things. I guess that's the sense I'm getting, and I could be completely wrong. I don't know if there are certain things that you're hoping will happen in the new year or different types of escape rooms. I mean, everybody always talks about, for example, VR, but I don't really see that happening that much.
So we've seen a whole bunch of different branches this year that were all you know, not, I mean, we've seen a lot of them that didn't work, but this year we saw three or four that blew our minds.
I think the first branch that David and I are really excited about is the combination of immersive theater and escape room in various different ways. We've been huge immersive theater fans, mm-hmm. and watching those two genres interact in different ways. I'm sure there's so many things we haven't seen there that are coming in the new year.
Yeah, and seen so many great ones this year. You know, in Anaheim, California, we played Zoe, which is basically a haunted house with escape room puzzles as gates. And we play a lot of games that are like, oh, it's horror, you're going to be afraid. And it's been like, okay, it was kind of scary.
This one was so scary that I was useless.
Yeah, Lisa was debris.
I was in the way. All I just tried to stay in the middle of the group when we had to move. I was like, David's about to solve a puzzle. Get near the group. We're going to have to move.
Yeah, it was me and our friend Lindsay. The two of us probably solved 90% of the puzzles. Maybe even, it may have even been closer to 100. We solved basically everything while everyone else was just like terrified. And it was an incredible experience. It was.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. And Lisa walked out and was like, I hate that, but I respect it.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then we played a VR game in Germany.
I read about that.
We had our probably our worst diva moment. We really try not to be divas. but we did
because we didn't want to play another bad VR game. We've played a number of bad VR games
and a whole bunch that were just kind of fine, but not like.
But they just weren't our thing. It wasn't. We love the real live escape room thing, and we didn't want to play another mediocre one that was VR. And so, this company had invited us.
But we went out to lunch with Escape Maniac, who's kind of like the. I want to plug him, Sebastian and Escape Maniac. He's kind of the German blogger, at least the one that we know.
We played an escape room with him. We went out to lunch. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. And we sat around talking for forever.
Yeah, and he tweeted that we were in town, and then a handful of companies immediately wrote to us, and we were like, come play. And one of them was this VR game.
Yeah, and we had planned a whole day. We were going to be doing some, like, real tourism. Mm-hmm. We had some other escape rooms booked, and so we basically said to him, if you can open for us...
We're playing your game at your real life game at like 10
one of
o'clock.
Your real life games at 9:30 or something on Sunday night, and we were like, well, we're not going to be in your neighborhood until then, so if you can open for us after that game, then
at 11. And we were 11. Like, we're being such jerks, like, this is like,
it's a Sunday night,
and like we were like, we didn't want to say like we really couldn't get there any earlier, but like. We were kind of like, just take the out. We don't want to play and write a bad review of another VR game. And they were like, we'll be open. We'll have someone there.
They brought in someone after hours to run our game.
And it blew our minds.
It was incredible.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was so superb.
They did things with VR that you can't do in a real world. They used it smartly to give us experiences that we couldn't have had otherwise. And I didn't get motion sick.
Which is the first time ever in any VR for you.
Yeah.
Period.
I always get motion sick.
Oh, wow.
It was silky smooth. And you know, we were wearing vests that had we had a laptop attached to our back, so we weren't, like, tangled up in cords or anything like that. We both had our own space. It was, like, 3 meter by 3 meter space to walk
The game is
in.
Huxley. We didn't say that, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah, it's VR Huxley.
From Exit VR.
Yeah. And they were, you know, they were so... They just did such a good job with it. And then we were like, wow, I'm really happy that they persisted.
Yeah.
Because we were never that big a pain in the ass, I don't think.
I hope not. We try to go out of our way for other people as opposed to...
Yeah. Although sometimes our schedules are rigid. But yeah,
that's not our fault.
Yeah, we just didn't want to go. And I'm so happy we did. And then we've sent a whole bunch of people there, and every single person has written back, and they were like, we didn't believe you, but this was amazing. Egnor was one of them. Dan Egnor was one of them. He was like, I didn't think that VR was ready, and that was kind of where we were at. We just didn't think that VR was ready, not that, like, it's not possible to make a good VR game. But it turns out, under the right circumstances, it's ready.
That's pretty cool. And any other kind of branches that you're thinking of or that you've witnessed?
There's been all sorts of other stuff, but those are the big ones that, you know, is kind of the horror, the immersive theater aspect, and the virtual. And
those are the things that are maybe making the most dramatic influences on escape rooms, and that escape rooms are influencing.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of other little things, but I think those are the three areas we're really looking at.
Yeah. We saw a few that like really overlapped with, like one that, I'll shout out to one that we're not going to give a golden lock into, if only because it's, you can't do it anymore. Was a Scout Expedition Company.
They
created,
The Nest,
which was an immersive,
It was theater. It was more theater than escape room, but it was using escape room style gameplay to carry the narrative of the theater.
And to kind of like keep you from getting too far ahead of yourself.
And it was one of the most remarkable experiences we've had this year.
We walked out of it and couldn't talk about it. It hit us so hard in the feels that we walked out, we went back to our Airbnb. This was out in California. And it wasn't until the next day that we actually felt like we could talk about it, which has never, ever happened before.
That's pretty cool.
Well, sounds very exciting.
Are any escape rooms going longer than the hour? Have you seen any escape rooms that are trying to push the envelope in time?
Yeah. Yes. We played an incredible escape room / immersive experience that went longer than the hour.
I'm going blank.
In Houston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was 2 hours. Yeah, Strange Bird Immersive. They've got an hour and a half to 2 hour game that's like, it's describing it as a like an escape room or an immersive sandwich.
Yeah.
It starts off with an immersive performance. Then you go into a pure 60-minute escape room. It's just straight puzzles, and then it closes with an immersive performance.
It's another company that went out of their way for us, but that was not our fault.
Yeah.
That was the hurricane's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. And
and we didn't realize it was 2 hours when we were like, so you can open for it, so you'll run our game at like, what, 11? Like, and they were like, it's a 2 hour game at 11. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Did you say it like that? We're going to run our game at 11, please.
Very enthusiastic about it. We were in New Orleans when Hurricane Nate was blowing through and all of our games got canceled. And so we looked at a map and we were like, we'd heard of Strange Bird Immersive. We heard they were pretty good. We're going to drive 5 hours to Houston. And that was what we did. We got in there. We had dinner. We went to a game. We didn't even have dinner. We drove into Houston, went directly to a game, stopped off at a McDonald's, threw some food down our faces, and then went over to Strange Bird, played, and then went and passed out at a hotel. We got off of Hotels Tonight.
Yep.
And the companies in Houston were really accommodating.
Yeah, but when we called them from the car and said, we're on our way to Houston, can we play?
Okay. But the cool thing about what Strange Bird did was that so many of the games we've played with actors have this recurring problem where the actor is performing their heart out for you, but you know that you're on the clock and you can see a puzzle behind them and you're like, you're torn. Part of you wants to go and like, you know, enjoy the performance. Or maybe endure it, depending upon how eager you are to get to that puzzle. But either way, you're like, you can feel the clock ticking, and you're like, I want to go solve that. And by sandwiching it, you know, the game with the performance, they cleared out that problem and let us take in the performance, and then let us take in the game, and then let us take in the performance, and each segment of it left an indelible mark.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like having like cinematic cutscenes in a video game or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like kind of like playing Metal Gear, but you know, it was just like really long cutscenes.
I think we find that interesting because whenever we've made our theatrical events, we tried to have no cutscenes, and the majority of it was just the performance of interacting with a character as opposed to watching things. And because we only had an hour, as you know, and you can't do very much in an hour.
Yeah, and by stretching this out, they really made it work.
But we also relied on our pregame somewhat to help give the players that that time to get to know the world as well.
Yeah, and that was kind of the initial performance was very at Strangebird was very good at that. And they're also very attentive to who wants to interact and to what degree. And they were phenomenal at zeroing in and like, you know, picking their moments and picking the people to interact with, which I think is another one of the flaws that happens in some of these actor-driven experiences, which is like not everybody wants to, not everyone feels comfortable interacting with the actors. And, you know, some people are like, I'm always like, oh yeah, let's LARP. Who are you? I'll be this guy.
Well, they're a theater company too. And I know that like whenever I was in shows that either required you to engage with the audience or the director had the brilliant idea that there would be audience participation, that you had to learn very quickly who was going to panic when you pointed them out in the audience. Cause like it's just, you have to learn because a lot of people, the majority of audiences, don't want anything to do with the show.
And Strangebird has a really smart mechanism built right into it that allows them to kind of go person by person in a comfortable setting and figure out how willing each person will be.
That's super exciting because it sounds like the new year and the future of escape rooms has still a lot of area to cover and new things to discover. And so I can't wait. Yeah.
I think we're going to see just incredible things this coming year.
Yeah.
Just based on what we've already seen and what we, you know, some of the things we know are coming from different companies. Some of the things we've gotten to poke our heads into, at the various places we visited.
Right. Seeing things that are under construction and hearing about what they're going to be like and being able to imagine what they're trying to do. Yeah, there's great stuff coming.
Some of these owners are so insane, and us players are going to benefit from it incredibly.
Oh, well, it's been almost an hour, and we've been talking. And we've even cut out some of this podcast, and so it's been longer than that. Wow, but those are all secret things, so unfortunately
Carol,
our audience
what the
don't. Cut that shit out, man.
Oh my god.
There's nothing in this that we could have possibly segued from that would you could infer something from.
It's all seamless and unedited.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, David and Lisa Spira. And you can find them on roomescapeartist.com. And probably it's easy enough to find. And they're all over. I'm pretty sure that everybody listening to this podcast knows who they are. But you can find them, roomescapeartist.com. Thank you so much for joining us again. We will see you next year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
And hopefully we'll see you next year in Toronto.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
No promises on that happening, but I got a good feeling.
We're hoping. We'll see.
And congrats on your first successful tour, your first official escape room touring trip.
Thank you very much. We're just happy that we didn't bring any shame to our families.
Yay! Always
okay.
A bonus.
Sadly, Manpans, you're going to speak us out, but I'm not with you because you are downstairs on Skype, and so I can't do anything to make you crack. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should turn on the camera or something.
Room Escape Divas is brought to you by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find other fun podcasts just like this one. You can also find us on Facebook. Just click the like button. And if you go to Twitter, you can use the hashtag REDivas to find us.
You know, I don't even use that hashtag. I don't know why we keep... I mean, I should.
Though. Should we just stop mentioning it then?
No. I think we should. Somebody actually used it and I found somebody talking about us. So
that's
amazing. So yes, please keep using it.
Did I already mention roomescapedivas@gmail.com? You should email us. Anyway.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.